close enough.
Yeah.
I'd like to call the work session to order, 5:30 p.m. The first thing on our agenda is the Cold Springs sewer funding slash study. Al Yeager, our engineer, is here, and I just preface it with the public. I had talked to Al in the last week and asked him, the previous one was only for south of 370, and I had asked him to expand it to cover the entire peninsula because we have other projects, and I'm sure Al will get into that. So it's a larger study.
So if, I'm just going to pull the zoning map out a little bit here so we can all see it. So the initial proposal included everything from Barbara Lane north up to Palmer Elementary, the what is called the Pompo Woods Development, Brick Walk, and all of the Melvin Farms property. So it's this area here.
And it's hitting the dry sewers between?
It includes the areas, most of the areas that have dry sewer.
Yeah.
The expanded proposal covers everything south of Patchett Road, including Whitetail Woods and the Landings dry sewer districts. Everything all the way over to Hillside Drive, down and around the east end of Hayes Road, up to the Brick Walk subdivision border. So there's a few different ways that this can go. This could all be low pressure and go back to the Melvin Farms pump station. It could be low pressure and go across the bridge to the sawmill pump station next to the Good Dog Park, County Park pump station. The Landings and Whitetail Woods, I long-term envision going across Patchett Road and tying into the second pump station associated with Timber Bends. But the bottom line is all of these neighborhoods eventually will want to be sewered or need to be sewered. And that's why they were built with dry sewers when they were developed initially. So what the expanded area will do, will give you cost estimates. It'll give you a tool to request funding for all of the entire area to expand sewer service to the area, and give you a tool to present to the public what the actual costs are when they ask, you know, what's it gonna take to get sewers to our neighbor. I do like the idea of a comprehensive approach. It will open up doors for grant funding in the future, whether it be through state, county, or federal agencies. This is the first step in getting grant funding to you for sewer district extensions. Any questions?
So the result of the study, would it, I don't know how to ask the question. Is it an all or nothing thing, or are you going to be able to, like, say you can do this segment for this?
No, we're going to break it out. Yeah, we will break it out by area.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll break it out by the Melvin Farms contributing area. We'll break it out by the eastern Cold Springs Peninsula area and the northern Cold Springs Peninsula area.
So what right now there's dry sewers, and what is it that we have to do in general? To go from what we have now to what the ultimate would be? What is it?
Well, we need to build infrastructure to connect all these existing developments to either the Barbara Lane treatment plant,
okay,
which is this purple square here,
okay,
or up to the second Timberbank pump station that will be constructed here, or come across the river to the sawmill county pump station, which is tributary to Wetzel Road.
So what, I'm sorry for monopolizing this, but what are the dry sewers? They go from your house to out to the road? And
no, the sewer's in the street, in the road,
right? Oh, they're
right
in their street.
They just don't have any flow.
You still have to connect to them, though.
Right. The people who live in dry sewers have septic.
Right.
They would have to still jump through the hurdle of connecting when the sewer does go by that area. So they have a septic now, but it's ready to handle, the infrastructure's there to have the sewer in those select developments.
I will say this, the groundwater table and soils on the Cold Springs Peninsula in general are considered poor for subsurface disposal of waste. heavy clay soils with low percolation rates. Many homes out there that if they had to replace their system would end up having to build a raised bed system by the current design standards. Or homes that are already on a raised bed system that, you know, typically those systems have a 25 to 40 year life expectancy. So a neighborhood like Amelia Park, where there is quite a few raised bed systems that was built in the 90s, well, those people are, you know, they're getting to the end of the service life of their raised bed septic system. So that's a significant cost for those folks, especially for the size of the houses those are. You know, we're talking 40, 50 grand to replace a raised bed system in those in that neighborhood per house.
That's good.
And I mean, my thought process is to use that. I also gave everybody the board. I gave us the remaining ARPA funds.
So how much is this going to cost?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Al, but the full scope plan
is
49.6. So this is, he gave you two sheets. One was the first sheet that he came up with the original proposal, which was 29.
$29.9.
So for an additional almost 20,000, we're including that and the additional area. So we're getting the entire peninsula of where we currently would want to have a plan for sewers for the future. It would be on paper. And then we can tackle this as a case by case basis.
From the county and support it, and you know, this can give us leverage to get the county to make sure that we have adequate capacity in the treatment plant moving forward to connect the existing residents and any new residents the new development that's constructed.
So you want to take this out of ARPA?
Yeah. Yeah, I know we had talked about when we were talking with the Melvin Farms proposal about having the developer pay in, but Councilor Moore had, you know, we have some concerns. You ask a developer to commit to something, they're going to want a commitment back, and he's absolutely right. You know, I'd rather have this study and then be able to go to a developer, and we've got it, and we paid for it, so they don't owe us anything, but we have the plan, or at least the steps to the process to go to move forward. And how long, what's one of the oldest developments out there? Is it Amelia Park?
In that area, it would be, I'm not sure, I think Orchard Estates is actually, so Gloria Drive is actually okay. A few years before Amelia Park.
Right.
But they're both early 90s.
Yeah. And, you know, attacking it by area, then the neighbors can look when we get to that point. I think it also ties into the waterfront revitalization about protecting the river and, you know, taking care of trying to prevent what happened out at Whispering Oaks on the west side.
Yep. And West Phoenix.
Right.
West Phoenix is really more, is almost more relevant simply because of the soil conditions.
Right.
Does this go with it? What is this?
That's for Top Fab. Oh. That's their sewer extension in West Jenny.
Okay.
It's totally separate.
Okay. Great.
Does anybody else have any questions?
Nope. I'm good.
Is everybody okay with which plan? Are we good with?
I'm good with
doing the full.
I'm with the full.
Okay. Great. Then you'd go with the one dated January 17th,
yep.
2024. Okay. Our next item, outstanding grants. Talked to Kevin Merrill, our Parks Director, and I had talked to Al briefly over
Can
the course.
Show us what page this is at, right?
So yes. Yeah. There's it just says park project date amount status. I gave that to the board members. We have outstanding grants in various phases of state processes. We go back all the way to, I was guessing, 2014 for the cold storage. 2015 is when you got it? Okay. So we got 100 grand for a cold storage building for the highway. Back in around the spray park time, we got the $100,000 for the bathroom bathhouse grant. We got $50,000 for the house demolition that we want to repurpose because we didn't have everything in order to be able to use it for the demo, but we can modify the grant to use the money. And then we have back in, I'm gonna guess 2021 or 22, we got awarded the grant from Senator Mannion for $200,000 for fitness equipment.
Yeah, I think we actually got that in December of 19. I think it was December 19. I think we got the award letter, as I recall, we got the award letter before Joe left office.
Okay.
For right what? The fitness equipment?
Yeah, the playground equipment. Okay. It was originally written as a playground equipment.
Okay. So, what I wanted to talk to the board about, we'd originally earmarked that $200 for fitness equipment. Is that still the direction the board wants to take? And I know Councilor Gerasi has.
Well, I had a conversation with our parks director, Kevin Merrill, yesterday, and he's a parks guy, I'm a former parks guy, and one of the things that concerns me about that park. Let me back up. The most important thing you can do in a park are your restroom facilities. The most important thing. And everything else kind of falls in line after that. And we have $100,000 here to upgrade the restroom facilities. I'm not the budget person here, but I can't imagine $100,000 being adequate to do all that would be nice to do there. And then when you sit in that building, I asked Kev, I said, Kev, what do you do with this building? I mean, it's kind of an odd-shaped little community room there. He says, well, people rent it for parties and things like that. I said, well, how important is it for that? He said, well, it's just what they do with it. So I'm not proposing this. I'm kind of like throwing it out there to get you thinking. If someone was to say to us from the state that your $200,000 grant that we gave you, which, oh, incidentally, we have... we can do a year extension on that. We don't have to spend it in 2024. What if it were possible to add that to the $100,000 we have? We have $300,000, and maybe that's not enough, and do a study or do a plan to, an architectural plan for what we ought to do for restrooms and the main building in that park. So it was just a thought. I'm not saying we should do it, but I'm also saying that I don't think $100,000 is going to get you the kind of restroom facilities you really need with the increased use of that park.
This was just a preliminary, I'm sitting here in office.
Are we talking about the playground or?
Yes. Yeah. I'm saying, even though I love playgrounds and I love fitness and all that, they're all good things to do, and but if we don't want to go out and borrow money to take care of our restroom facilities, Jeff, should we consider that money? And maybe we shouldn't. Maybe the state will say, no, you can't. You ask for playground money. We're going to build a playground. I don't know the answer.
Right, yeah.
But I'm just throwing it out as a thought that to at least get us to be thinking that we might have a bigger need in there that $100,000 can take care of for the restrooms for that park.
My only thoughts on restroom for the park, and I'm not an architect and I wouldn't pretend to be, my only concern is having one centralized restroom and the way our fields are spaced out, especially where the soccer fields are in comparison to the existing building. Mm-hmm. I don't know if one centralized restroom serves those soccer fields adequately. You're going to have people crossing the parking lot and going quite a distance to where the restroom is.
Mm-hmm. It's an issue.
The same thing, quite frankly, can be said for Pop Warner. You see it, in county parks they do it too, Bob, where you don't have restrooms that are located to highly trafficked areas of a park, you would bring in port bodies for the seasons that those facilities are being used heavily. you know, for what porta potties cost and what it costs to build a standalone bathroom. Boy, you can rent porta potties for an awful long time before you have spent, you know, $300,000 on a new restroom facility. Not to say that it's not a bad thing to have in place, you know, long-term permanent restrooms, but when you start looking at the cost-benefit analysis of it and then trying to put all the bathrooms in one centralized location, I don't know if that really truly addresses the whole need when you consider the actual size and area covered by a park. Just a thought process. The other piece of it is, from a playground equipment standpoint, where a playground is really oriented towards kids six and under. And now when you have such a mixed demographic of use at the playground, in that you have Baldwinsville Youth Soccer, which has practices for four different age groups, and many families having multiple kids in multiple age groups, you have this overlap of, you know, my 4 and 5 year old is playing at 8, my 6 and 7 year old plays at 9:30, and my 9 and 10 year old, I don't know what the age brackets are for youth soccer, but plays at 11. Having some form of playground equipment for all ages of kids seems like it would fill a need for the community and parents that are there for sports activities, where your 10-year-old doesn't want to stay there and watch your 4-year-old practice soccer, or lacrosse, or Pop Warner, or whatever activity that there is.
Well,
you know, I agree with you both. What I would like to do is, you know what we should do is, we should pull BISA, we should pull Pop Warner, we should pull BYS, or BYL. Those are the people that use the park the most. They're the ones that are there 8 hours a day, sometimes in the summertime, and see what the issue is. Do they have a bathroom issue? Do they have a playground issue? Let's hear from the public. Absolutely. To see what they really need and want, and then we can go from there. And then we could probably get a spec of, okay, this, we need more bathrooms, we need a bigger bathroom, this is where it should be. You know, maybe we put an adjacent bathroom over on this side over here, or we do it that way. Or, you know, I like the playground equipment as well too, like the, you know, some of that stuff too for older kids when they're out there, you know, when their younger ones are playing football.
You know, your kids are a few years apart.
Yeah.
You were there for.
I gotta drag my little one out at the park. God forbid, kicking and screaming the whole way. What am I gonna do? I'm gonna sit there. I'm gonna be bored.
Your 11-year-old that, if your kids are spread apart a little bit, it's because. I mean, I didn't have that problem. My kids are really close age, but I know other families that I saw when my kids were at sports practices struggled with that.
Yeah.
Right. Or so, kids that go to the spray park are younger. And,
yes.
You know, you got adult kids that might want to go to playground.
Yeah, older kids that would be more interested in the playground.
So first we should just find out if we can transfer this grant.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
We got some homework to do.
We don't even know if we can, before we hold up. Yeah. Surveys and everything. We should find out if we can move this money. If we can, then we can start surveying people and finding out.
Well, you could do it kind of, you know, coincide with each other. Right. You know, get the ball rolling.
I think the biggest thing is to get the ball rolling and talk to the public and see what they want. I mean, I can see, as being a youth sports coach, Johnny's got to go to the bathroom and he's playing on Spence Field. You do not necessarily want Johnny walking to the centralized bathroom. Johnny's going to be gone for 15 minutes, and who knows what trouble Johnny gets in between Spence Field and the bathroom and the way back.
Right. And this is...
Just saying.
Yeah.
So what if Kevin's not here, and what if you charge Kevin with doing this investigating?
Yeah, and the Parks Committee. To revisit.
Or do you do it through, I was going to say, do it through the peach jar thing?
The
school district.
It's Kevin's baby.
Yeah.
Let him run with it. But I'll volunteer as a member of this board with my parks background. And if you don't want it, that's fine. But I'm more than happy to sit down with this committee and work with him. But because Jeff, you're absolutely right. Let's talk to the users, and find out what the need is. and go from there.
Great. Anybody, I'm sorry, I forgot to ask the public on the first thing. Does anybody have any questions so far or issues? Did anybody have anything on the...
I just had a question that Al was talking about these 10, 11-year-olds and stuff in the playground equipment. Again, I don't know if you guys have got to check on all this stuff, but usually those guys are playing basketball or tennis. I mean, how many kids do you really see on a playground that are 10 and 11?
So the initial grant application was kind of for like an American Ninja Warrior obstacle course, which would be attractive to kids that are, you know,
13
on. Okay,
I guess I gotta go to the playground more
then,
because
I'm
still
on. No, you got a
vision. Yeah. Coming off, I'll show you the equipment that we originally applied.
I'm sure there is.
It's pretty cool. It's like from a as a kid, I would have bought it.
Okay. I'm all for the kids being outside. I have no problem with that.
Fred.
Yeah, I don't want to come off sounding the wrong way, but I mean, I hear about these difficulties of managing two kids that are a couple years apart. I was the youngest of 12 kids. My parents, in 26 years, my parents had 12 kids. We got the town park when I was a senior. There was no town park before that. My parents never owned two cars at the same time. I never heard my mother or father ever complain once about a half an inch of snow, or we gotta work a half an hour late, or it's difficult, we gotta watch one kid and get the other kid over and changing the diapers. Not once did I ever hear them complain. I grew up in the 60s. Maybe things are changed. Every single one of my brothers and sisters has kids. I'm an uncle of over 70. I was an uncle when I was 3 months old. I've never heard my family ever complain like I hear complaints in this town about, oh, we don't have enough monkey bars or swing sets, or how did we manage when we had none? Parents were creative, and they made do. They didn't rely on government for handouts.
Right, but our idea is, at the park, we have a lot of youth-oriented activities that we're missing the intermediate.
Wrong way, but, I mean, complaints about an hour here, a little crying there. Imagine how things were when they weren't handed out and you had to make on your own. We built a spray park in my backyard.
Right.
We got a piece of plastic, put a hose on there, and all the kids in the neighborhood came.
Yeah. Okay.
So my point is, government doesn't have to provide every single thing to nurture the kids.
Right. Well, thank you.
Parents are responsible. We'll find a way.
Okay. Okay, the next item on the agenda, the solar moratorium.
All right, I ask that this be put on the work session so to remind us that we've got a moratorium that is going to expire, I don't know when, but soon, April. So the question that I would like us to entertain is, where are we going in this town with solar? As long as we don't forget, I don't have a problem doing solar moratorium extension every 6 months, but I don't think that's the appropriate way to do it. And, you know, playing my card, if there's never another solar farm proposal in this town, I'll be a happy town councilor. But that's my position.
I agree with you.
So I don't know what we're legally allowed to do or what we should do, but it sounds like we ought to do some investigating in terms of what we are able to do with solar. Because my biggest fear is we're going to forget to do the moratorium extension, and then someone's going to come by with an application that we have to honor. So
weren't we looking into taxing the parcel mm-hmm. that the solar was on?
That was part of it.
If I can make a suggestion, I think initially we talked about getting together with the planning board, taking our existing code concerning solar and see how we want to change that and come up with a plan, because ultimately, whatever we decide to do, the planning board is the one that has to administer. Mm-hmm. So, and we haven't really gotten together with them.
Right. But as part, right, that was what the plan was. As part of the club, part of the group that worked on the club also took the time to look at the solar code and all the codes, and we have prepared some recommendations with regard to improving the solar codes and other parts of the code that we're going to be presenting to this board very soon. But to answer your first question, Bob, the reason for the moratorium was to look at the solar codes and see if you wanted to change them. So you have the right, Tony, I believe this is correct, you have the right to maintain a moratorium if you're looking at changing the law. I don't believe you have the right to just place a moratorium for no reason, and that was the rationale. So as long as this code review and update is in process, you can maintain and should extend, if we're not done by April, the moratorium.
So if we can wait till the planning board is planning on doing this relatively soon, we can take that plan, that's part of our discussion, what we want to do.
So relatively soon.
As I say, I think I read an article just right before the new year. There's a town in the Hudson Valley that is being challenged by a solar developer because they've had a moratorium in place for 2 years. And I believe the article I read said that there's a state law that said that you can't have a moratorium in place for more than 12 months consecutively by New York State town law. So we got a few months to figure it out, but if we're working on it, I don't know if anybody could really challenge us, but I think we do have to at least show that we're working on it to avoid having that type of challenge come up.
Right, well, so relatively soon is how quick.
We have prepared of the recommended code change.
So when are you going to hit send tomorrow?
Well, I want to have one more go around with the people.
Yeah.
Okay, just to make sure in the meantime we haven't... we're comfortable that we've covered all the areas we feel are relevant and important to cover now, and then it's just a matter of putting it to you. So I would say for the end of this month for sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about the process. It's done. It's just a final review and check, and we can present it to you and well, get our rationale and go from there.
And I mean, we meet again on February 2nd, so that's doable. You know, we could look at it, and if they don't get it to us by then, we meet again on the 16th of February. So we're still in the time frame of April. If we look at it, modify it, revise it, have a public hearing the end of March.
Seems doable.
For a time frame.
So
does that seem okay, Bob?
The only question that's going through my head, having not seen the proposal, Jack, is, and I got to be careful here, but is it possible to make it really difficult for a solar installation to ever occur again in the town of Lysander? And is that being too naive or too whatever? And I don't know what kind of consensus, if there is any, on this board. Jeff says he kind of agrees with me. But
I do agree with you.
Why are we even entertaining the idea of any future solar farm in the town of Lysander if we can legally figure out a way without being capricious, arbitrary, illegal, or whatever to make it so arduous that they would not even consider coming to this town? Why can't we do that?
We walk a fine line because a solar is considered a utility.
Yep.
So you can't say we don't want any.
Right.
So you got to be careful.
Understood.
And we have to, whatever plan comes up with, as long as we have to have it by federal law, let's make it as tight as we can make it. That's all I can say.
Okay.
You can't say
no, I hear you.
You don't want any.
So. You can definitely make it very restrictive. I think that we've already seen the state take away some local control over these in other municipalities that have been too restrictive.
And this was about battery storage as well, too. So and I don't know if the state, right.
I think we would be safe on the battery moratorium if we just say, hey, we're waiting for the guidance on this, from the state on the fire protection piece of this. And if anybody challenged us, I think we would be on solid standing because the state has a committee set up and is studying that and coming up with a supposedly coming up with a recommendation for battery energy storage. So we just implemented that in October, as I recall, maybe it was September, but it was this fall. So we have a little bit of time to wait for the state to come out with a report, and then you know we can take their guidelines and use them or modify them as needed to work for the town of Lysander.
Great.
Ed?
Just real quick question, and I'm not picking on anybody, I'm just curious, I don't know. I understand the battery issue. I don't understand what the concern is with the solar farms in general.
Well, I think we've had the law on the books for 6-7 years. I think it's an idea. We had a lot of people coming in that wanted to build solar, and we felt that maybe our setbacks and some of the rules on where they could be weren't, as people decided to build more, it was like, whoa, is this how we want to proceed? And it's really a revision of our law to make sure where we want the allowed uses to be.
Ed, this is not personal stuff. This is not personal on your roof. These are the commercial ones.
We also had concerns from citizens who, once projects were put in place, who did not like the appearance, the aesthetics of the projects that were put in place.
Yeah, like our fence screening.
Yeah, so there was a lot of concern with that, which would cause us to rethink our current code.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the fence screening, what I saw on paper when the Church Road Oya came in, I was like, oh, that'll work. And then you see the practical application, and there's still more. That developer hasn't finished, but, you know.
It's been like that.
What I see, right. Yeah, my parents would have been after me if we probably still lived across the street. So it is personal on that end for me for that part.
Thank you. That's curious.
Fred?
Just a couple things. I believe it was, I don't know, maybe 8-10 months ago, we had an open public hearing regarding the solar. And I think 100% of the people that came up and spoke at the meeting were against building any major, you know, solar farms. They weren't against personal. With regard to the battery storage, you will never, ever, ever see a commercial solar set up with battery storage. If they did that, you would need a giant warehouse like they were trying to build at 690 and Ankle to store the batteries. They are not efficient. The only time you ever have battery storage is with a homeowner or a business usage, okay? You're never going to see that with commercial. They do direct feed, which is why we couldn't put the solar farm on the old Lysander landfill, because it's too far away to run the phase 3 wiring. We're on Church Road, it's straight up, and they're on a pole already. So that's regarding that. Now, I specifically remember speaking with Councilor Garassi and the town attorney during that public hearing about, if nobody in the town is in favor of solar, why are we doing this every 6 months? Why don't we just do it inevitably? At that point in time, the town attorney looked directly at me and told me state law mandates that you have to do it every 6 months, and you have to go by state law. You said those exact words to me. So to answer Mr. Garassi's question, the state mandates that we have to do it every 6 months, and until we get the state to mandate, or we got a law that, you know, prevents it for one reason or another, that's why we have to do it every 6 months.
Yeah, but we also can't keep extending the 6 months. We have developers that wanted to submit plans.
That wasn't disclosed the last time that I asked about it.
That's just an article that I read, and I don't know where it goes, but I know that
after two extensions, it's difficult to renew that information wasn't shared when I asked that question 8 or 10 months ago. So that's something we have to look into, but I specifically remember every 6 months.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wish it was different. Mr. Moore said, everybody on the board is from Lysander. They love Lysander. And like Mr. Corey said, everybody on the planning board is from Lysander. They love Lysander. And I would assume that everybody on the club committee is from Lysander. I'm not sure whether they love Lysander or not. I know they weren't elected. And I know everybody on the club committee was appointed. And on that club committee is a couple of builders.
Right. But you do need those people because you need the input from the developer.
I understand.
Now, I'm not trying to cut you off, but we have a couple other things that we need to discuss.
Where is the club committee from the soccer mom? The people that have lived here for 40 and 50 maybe a couple years that aren't a builder.
But they also come to the public hearings. They have the opportunity at the public hearings to make their statement. They can send an email to the board at any time about any subject. They can stop in and talk to us.
Okay.
So they have the opportunity.
They have some representation from the soccer moms out there on our club committee.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to skip ahead to the county listening tour because Jack stopped in just for this purpose, and we'll take care of that. Jack, I had asked the planning board to look over the county's doing a listening tour as we, assess housing needs in Onondaga County.
Yeah.
And they had some questions they wanted us to answer before we either attend virtually or in person on right. this, and right. the last few are coming up.
Right. Well, the planning board discussed the five questions that the county sent out. And I'll just try to summarize the key points of where the planning board come out. First of all, the planning board, I think almost to a man, with the possible exception of our engineer, felt that they did not have the expertise nor the information to take a guess at what housing needs 10 years from now would be, per se. We do believe that affordability and senior housing are two issues that are always going to be with us and are becoming more prevalent now in the town. But if you look at the statistics for the town of Lysander over the last 8-10 years, the number of people in Lysander really hasn't changed a lot. We're hovering around 22.5 to 23.1 over that period. And you look at the housing starts and development pace, it's been pretty stable. We've had a low of, I think it was 17 units, Al, and a high of 126 in a year that were built and given permits for. Our sense is that the work that was done in the 2015 and now the 2023 updated CLUP looked into a lot of issues that sort of relate to this. And that we're very comfortable in our position that those two documents combined, and the essence of it is spelled out in the update, lays out a very clear vision and path for what the town of Lysander wants this place to be. And it sets goals and parameters of how to get there. We have codes in place that provide sufficient coverage of subdivision, patrol site use, all the things that would affect development in this area, and they have sufficient flexibility in them to follow whatever path the town wants to take. And when you look at it that way, you kind of say, well, why do we need to go out and say, well, we got to put things in our code that are going to force this to happen or to force this not to happen?
The reality is our code, in general, will allow for whatever pace or type of development you wish to allow in this town. So, when we, you know, for example, we may be the only one, Al, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Lysander may be the only one in this area that has incentive zoning in it, in its codes and overlay. And what that does is it's already identified areas within the town where you can allow, under certain conditions, high density development if it's needed or wanted. So it's already there. It's in place. It's not something you have to add to boost your housing development. It's there if you want it to work. Right now, the planning board, between what it's approved and what is in process or has been made known to us to possibly come in for an application, there is some 800 to 900 new units already either approved or, shall we say, on the books, possibly to be approved over the next 10 years. So there's already a great deal of potential new housing coming in. So,
Jack, real quick, does that take into consideration of the different phases too that the builders are at? You know, the phase one versus phase.
What I'm really talking about is three projects: the approved apartments at Drake Landing, the Longview apartments, which we're now looking at, and the potential for Melvin Farms. I'm just looking at those three.
And the last section of Timber Banks, all of that land back there.
Well, yeah.
Another 250, 300 units back there.
Right.
Really.
And that's how you get up to almost 900, 1,000 units when you add them all together. So the planning board feels very strongly that there's really not likely to be a shortage of housing in the foreseeable future as we can see. Now maybe the county can look 10 years down the road, they've got a lot more resources looking at it than we have. But the main thing that the planning board would like to point out to the town board is that you have this kind of development, or you have this perceived influx from Micron that's gonna somehow fill up Clay and Solvay and Lysander and all these towns with 10, 15,000 new employees and their families. We have a problem here, and that problem is the bypass. And without the completion of that bypass around Baldwinsville, it would be a mess here to have any kind of significant expansion in housing. And anything the town board would say in response to the county's request of it has got to focus on that bypass being part of future development in Baldwinsville. But right now, downtown Baldwinsville is a mess.
In funding of sewer extensions. We have areas where you can do higher density development, but we need funding to connect our existing residents to those areas when they're developed.
Well, I'm pleased to hear what you just said, Jack. I mean, I'm sure others have a reaction too, because I think that's why you did a CLOP. That's exactly why you do that, and it's a good planning document, and that response is good enough for me in terms of telling the county, we've already done this, it's called the CLOP, and we know we're going to have development here, and we have a process or a protocol laid out, sort of an advisement through CLOP to how to do it right. So I'm good with this.
Okay. I mean, the next part is, and we can email each other, there's additional dates. And it went out to all planning board, town board members. I would hope that everybody will get an opportunity to either attend virtually or in person.
Right.
Some of the county meetings, because I'd like to hear what the other towns.
Sure.
I'm interested to see what Clay thinks can happen, or Cicero, or even Van Buren, because it does affect us. You know, we talk about the bypass. We get them to Van Buren. Okay, how do you get them out of Van Buren? And, you know, and that's another set of unique circumstances right. once you get across the river. Thank you for the work. I appreciate it. And one thing I did learn at my training last week, we could ask the planning board to advise us on anything, whether it's budget, highway, roads. So I'm glad I learned that last week. So, Jack, I'm glad you like to do some work for the town.
I wish you had learned.
I'll find the state law, the town law, to refer you to.
And by the way, just for Fred's edification, every member of the club is a resident of Lysander, and we do love
Lysander. So thank you very much, Jack. And one thing that I've said many, many times as a representative of this community, I represent the people who live here, not the people who hope to live here, not the people who may live here in the future, not the people in the county who want us to build. I represent the people who live in this community. And so to me, development, if we've got plans to put, not necessarily plans, but if developers have 800 to 1,000 units already in the books, and you're saying the max we've ever had, or recently, is 129 starts in a year, we're good for a long time. We don't need, more people knocking on the door to say, you should build here, you should build this here, you should build this here, you should build this here. To me, and that's just my opinion, I don't know how many other people share that opinion with me, but that's the way I feel.
Yeah, but you're going to have a transition here. When you start, you'll see a lot of the stuff we're starting to see now is apartments.
I understand that.
Of course, it's very residential. And that's going to provide, as people like me finally get tired of taking care of that 2-acre house and mowing the lawn and doing all that stuff. And we downsize and we go someplace else. That opens up a lot of existing housing for the younger families coming in. In other words, you've got a good inventory of housing here with the aging population shifting to another style of housing. You don't have to build a new home for every family you think might come in here.
Right. Thank you. Fred, quickly.
We all know that traffic is probably the biggest problem in our community. Now, when I go up there and I say, when you go through the village with your vehicle and you can't get in and out of a business, board members tend to look right through me. I was looking at them when Mr. Corey did an excellent job being a messenger, and they're all going like this, when he's like, we got a traffic problem in the village. When I do that, they look right through me. So I was happy to see that. And I think as far as the bypass is concerned, that's something that's been needed for 15, 20 years. I think we should push getting out in front of it instead of, you know, build more and then hope that that comes later on.
Right.
I mean, we have a definite traffic problem in our community. And, I mean, like, we don't even have a grocery store that people are trying to rush into and get out of. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we have obstacles. No doubt about it.
And as far as the club committee is concerned, I know they all live in Lysander. I'm sure they love Lysander. They probably wouldn't be living here. I'm just saying, I did some research and I found the representation was mostly by developers and real estate agents.
Yep.
And then one pseudo farmer that really isn't a farmer. And I was just wondering where the representation was.
Yes.
From the average Joe.
That was your opinion. And, you know, the supervisor set up the committee. So we've already covered it. Thank you. Okay, next, the open town board seat. I put this back on here because we had interest back in, January 4th to try to settle this. I know, talked to Ken Landon, who's in the audience. I've talked to Rob Helfrich, who's in the audience. I don't know if other board members have sat down and talked with either person. And, you know, here we are again. Four of us and three of us, you know, to make a decision to move forward with this. So I guess that I heard from Sandy Baker that, yes, she is withdrawing her name. So we are down to two. So Anybody want to say anything, or I don't know if either of them want to get up and speak for a few minutes? Do we want to? Can we give each of you 5 minutes that way, and then we can discuss it? We got 10 minutes here, and we can. Well,
we can do it in the session too.
Yeah. I'll let each of you speak, and then we can bring it back up when I have the motion on the agenda.
Yeah. No. I first of all, I have to apologize. I couldn't make the last meeting. I was diagnosed with COVID the day before. A very mild case. It was just, I just had a slight fever. That's it. But obviously, I would never come to a public meeting with COVID. Well, my big issue is my back went out. I literally couldn't walk. I could not walk. I think this makes a lot of sense, frankly. And I'll explain why. I mean, the first aspect of it, frankly, is my involvement, as you know, as president of Citizens Against Lysander Mega Warehouse. I didn't start all that, but I kind of took the bull by the horns, and I put an enormous amount of hours, analysis, speaking with neighbors. We actually developed a very large contingent that we represented, that I represented for the community on the west side of Vigo. It's over 1,000 residents, including if you include Gideon's Crest. That was quite an endeavor, and frankly, we were much more organized than I think a lot of people realized. It wasn't just me. We had a board. We had a steering committee. And from my perspective, and why this makes sense from a town council perspective, is because I truly represented the community on that issue. And the other aspect of this, why I think this makes a lot of sense, if you look at, I think my private experience parlays quite well to government experience. So I graduated from Lehigh University and got recruited from Johnson & Johnson into corporate development. So my whole entire career has been very analytical, incredibly analytical. So what I do corporate development involves mergers and acquisitions. So I was at J&J, I was sort of a financial analyst. I was also the M&A manager for mergers and acquisitions, finance manager at Corning. I was business development director, manager at Carrier, and I was director of corporate development at Walsh Allen. So what that involves is, I mean, I did the first deal in Malaysia. I did multiple acquisitions, and when you do that, you have to review a significant amount of information. You have to be incredibly detailed and analytical. You probably saw that from what I did from the comm group. And I think that actually parlays quite nicely to what we need and what I could provide as a town councilor. I'll get into the detail. I'll do the analysis. And frankly, from a corporate development perspective, what it really is providing executive management with the information, the analysis, to be able to support a good decision. So I should be doing the same thing. And that's just what I do. It's been what I've been doing for 40 years. I have a consultancy now that's been active. I support Raymond Corporation and Toyota with deals. I supported Upstate. I supported Highmark. Highmark was a big client of mine. So I think that experience actually parlays quite nicely into what we're doing here. I'm also a devout registered Republican. I've only ever voted for two Democrats in my whole entire life. One of them is sitting up there. So I think for this to actually work, I'm going to have to get the support of both the conservative and the Republican Party. Otherwise, I'll have to run the primary, run in a primary. And one other quick comment on that, which is kind of interesting, when you go back to look at what I did with the comm group, there's actually two members on our board right now that actually started with a lot of community involvement when it came to the spray park. And got out there same as I did, and work that initiative. But yeah, I'd be very interested. I'd be honored, frankly. I know there's probably these folks on the board that probably you got to get over the past history, recent past history here. But I think I'd be actually a pretty good counselor and really help. And I would be very. I'm not someone that would be. From a political perspective. I'm not someone that's going to abide by somebody else's political agenda. I'm not going to abide by special interest. Honest to God, it's the community, this community, that I will support and continue to support. And that's why I'm interested in the seat. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And Ken, if you want to get up, say you got 5 minutes, just like him.
Hi, Ken Landon. I've lived in this community approximately 50 years. I taught school for 37 years, public school, so I know a little bit about bureaucracy. I started coming to board meetings because of club. I wanted to find out what was going on, and I've got interested since then. And the idea of this vacant seat gives me the opportunity to provide service to the community. I've been involved with the Plainville Fire District for approximately 40 years. I was a firefighter and an EMT on their ambulance for about 20 years. I also was involved with GBAC on their ambulance for approximately 15 years. I'm a life member of both organizations. Currently, I am a commissioner with the Plainville Fire District. I come here to listen and to make decisions and form my own opinions based on everything that you hear. As I said in the letter that I sent to you folks, that many times listening is the most important thing, because you can get into a situation where you say to yourself, I never thought of that. Just because you're listening to everybody, and all of a sudden your opinion changes in a certain way. So my whole idea of throwing my hat into the ring was basically to offer community service. And again, just like everybody else, I love this community and just trying to help. And that's it.
Great. Thank you, Ken. We'll save discussion until the agenda item. You got a couple minutes left. I'm not sure if you want to end, in case anybody has to go to the bathroom or take a break in between the meetings.
All right. I'll go.
So that ends the work session for tonight. Thank you.